This is a presentation by Human Development Outreach and Extension at Cornell University.
Thank you very much for the nice introduction, and thank you very much for inviting me to speak here today. I'm extremely excited to share some of my recent research with you. And really, what I'm going to talk about today is a line of research that started years back when I was a graduate student at Stanford, and then it continued while I was working at the National Institutes on Aging. And it's just started its latest chapter when I joined the faculty in human development here at Cornell just in January. So it's a long research project. But in rough terms, it was all revolving around aging emotions and health-related decisions. And I'm extremely excited every time I have the opportunity to speak to people who are more out in the field. And I know a lot of you are involved with parent education, so focusing on aging is not necessarily something that immediately comes to mind, but I'm sure as you're working, you're involved with multiple generations who and you'll be aware of the different perspectives that people have. And so I'm hoping that later on, and when we have time for discussion, to have some great new perspectives and ideas on the kind of research that I'll be presenting today. And throughout my talk, feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions about some of the details of the studies that I'll be presenting to you today. Very well. So let me give you a brief overview of the ground I'm planning to cover today. So in broad terms, my work revolves around age differences in emotional processing. So I'm interested in how people process their own emotions, how they regulate their own emotions, how emotional experience changes over the lifespan. And then in turn, I'm also interested how these changes in emotional experience affect the way that people perceive emotionally salient information in the world. So if they encounter new emotional stimuli, emotional situations, how do they process these informations? What do they pay attention to? Are there certain things that they screen out? So in broad terms, that's what I'm interested in, and I'm looking at how it influences social context. I'm interested in how it influences the way people gather information, and specifically what I'll be focusing on today is how it influences information processing and the kinds of decision that people make in the health domain. And one aspect that is also common to all of my studies is this interesting finding that in terms of looking at the sources of these age differences in emotional processing, I find more and more evidence that it's not age by itself that's driving these effects. So it's not just purely the process of getting older and chronological age that's responsible for those findings. Instead, what we appear to find is that these effects are driven by lifespan changes in people's motivation, in their goals, and what really drives their everyday behavior in terms of the goals they're trying to achieve. And the important part about this is that if it was just chronological age, we wouldn't be able to do much about it, right? You know, if you're a certain age and you act in a certain way, that's it. But if it's people's motivations, people's momentary goals that are driving those effects, then we can do something about it. We can temporarily change people's goals and then maybe shift around the way they process information if there's something problematic about the way they approach the world. So I'll be talking a lot more about that later in that talk, but I just wanted to give you, in terms of my general overview, to give you this general picture. And by the end, we'll be returning to that and see what we've learned. All right. So to start off, let me tell you a little bit more about what we already know about age differences in emotional processing. So there has been a lot of the early research on aging was really focused on age differences in cognitive functioning, how fast people can process information, how well they can remember information, how memory declines with age. Also, people were interested in physical functioning and loss in physical functioning, and old people can't run as fast anymore as they used to. And so when people started to focus more on age differences in emotional experience, there was a big surprise. And in fact, it was such a big surprise that people started to call it the paradox of aging. Because here's what they found. They found that positive emotions remained more or less stable across the lifespan, but negative emotions declined steadily from people's teenage years. So in many ways, people never felt as bad as they felt when they were teenagers. But they still felt just as good as when they were teenagers. So the relative proportions of emotional experience were shifting towards the positive. And that was, at first, that was a big surprise to people. Again, it was called the paradox of aging. And this study here, it's by Charles Reynolds and Getz, and they actually followed four generations of people for more than 23 years, and then they basically used advanced statistical techniques to draw those beautiful curves. But it's been found in a lot of other studies, including studies where people carried little pagers around that paged them at random intervals during the day to ask them, how do you feel right now? And so across those different studies, we see the same pattern of findings. So as people get older, they feel less negative and more positive or equally positive. So that's good news. And those changes in emotional experience are accompanied by changes in the way people process emotional material that they encounter. And for one, older people seem to pay more attention to any kind of emotional material. And the studies that look at this kind of effect ask people to recall, listen to a conversation between two people and then recall that conversation, or read stories and then recall information about those stories. And it turns out that compared to younger people, older people remember a greater proportion of emotional material. They remember more about the emotional tone of the conversation and less about all the individual details. And the same thing if you have older couples recall a trip that they've taken as compared to younger couples. The younger couples really remember, and then we went there, and then we went there, and then we did this, and then we did this. Whereas for when you hear older couples talking about this, it's really all about how what they enjoyed and the emotional tone that was characteristic of the trip as a whole. Now, in addition to this general focus on emotional material, there's a specific focus on positive material. And it's been found in a variety of different experimental designs. So, for example, in one design, people were looking at a screen, and they saw pairs of images of facial expressions. So one of the images was smiling, and the other was neutral or frowning. And then they used different kinds of attention tracking techniques, including eye tracking, to see where people were looking. And it turns out that compared to younger people, older people are more likely to look away from negative images, negative expressions towards neutral expressions, and they're more likely to direct their attention towards smiling faces. In addition, when you look at autobiographical recall, you ask people to recall events from their past, everyone, regardless of their age, has a tendency to recall more positive material about their own autobiography. But this tendency appears to get stronger as people get older. So the older we get, the more positive our past appears to us. And it's also been looked at in tasks which look at recall for emotional images. So there's a standard set of pictures that have emotional content and that have been rated, so we know how positive or negative these pictures make people feel. And, for example, the positive ones have pictures of bunnies, or they have pictures of smiling children, and the negative ones have people who are injured or, you know, cockroaches on a pizza. So some of them are really, they differ in how negative they are. But if you take a bunch of positive pictures and a bunch of negative pictures and ask older and younger people to look at them and then later on tell you what they recall, it turns out that older people, overall, they recall less, but of what they recall a greater proportion of positive material. And so this kind of effect has been found across a wide variety of settings. And so by now, it's actually being called the age-related positivity effect because it seems to be relatively general. And so later in the talk, when I talk about the age-related positivity effect, this is what I mean. So by now, I've pretty much outlined what kind of age differences in emotional processing that we see. And recent research indicates that those effects appear to be, again, not driven by chronological age by itself, but they appear to be driven by lifespan changes in the motivation. And much of my research is influenced by a theory that's called socio-emotional selectivity theory. And according to this theory, as people move through the lifespan, they experience changes in their time perspective. So they feel, when people are younger, they feel that their whole life is ahead of them, and as they become older, they feel that they have less and less time left in life. That's not necessarily, you know, something that's negative. It's just basically how much in the future will I plan? How much time do I think I have left to accomplish certain goals? Now, according to socio-emotional selectivity theory, these changes in time perspective change the kinds of goals that people pursue. When people are young, they focus, and they have an open-ended time perspective, they are more likely to focus on optimizing the future. That can mean gathering as much information as possible so they can make the right decisions. And it can also mean trying to make lots of new contacts, network with people, and really be in a good position to plan out what's going to happen to them in the future. As people get older, their time perspective becomes more limited, and as a result, it doesn't make much sense anymore to plan for an extended future. Instead, people are thought to focus increasingly on the present moment and really savoring that moment and enjoying that moment for all that it's worth. And so it's important that this is a gradual process, so it doesn't suddenly hit people by the time, you know, they get letters from the AARP. It's not this sudden, now you're old and it's going to happen to you, but it's something that happens very gradually. So even someone who's in their 30s, like I am, you know, I'm noticing, okay, you know, maybe I'm not as broad anymore. Maybe I don't have to meet all of those new people. Maybe I should just focus on one specific area where I want to learn new things. There's two important points about this theory to remember. First of all, its lifespan, it's changes in time perspective. Again, not chronological age by itself that's driving that. And there are some situations where even younger people can have a limited time perspective, and there are some situations where even older people can have an expansive time perspective. And in experiments, it was shown that if you tell younger people, imagine you're going to move across the country, a simple geographical move, that's going to change their everyday life, younger people look a little bit like older people in their social goal priorities. And by the same token, if you tell older people, imagine there's this new pill that you can take that will make you live 20 years longer than you ever expected to live, their social goals and their priorities actually look a lot more like those of younger people. So this means that the fact that it's driven by time perspective and by goals means that you can shift people's preferences around by the kind of context that you give them. And in fact, it's funny because looking right now, it's the last week of the semester at Cornell, and a lot of the seniors are actually probably showing those same effects of, you know, time is limited and they want to enjoy the moment. And so they come into a little bit of conflict with the fact that they should be studying for their finals. And that's another important point. That's another important point to mention about the theory. It's most relevant when people are in goal conflict. So a lot of times, people can actually pursue goals that are both good for make them feel good in the moment and make them, you know, make their future turn out right. But there are some situations where there is this kind of conflict, and the graduating seniors would be in exactly that situation. You know, the weather is beautiful outside, you know, they're with all their friends, and then at the same time, you know, they should be studying for those finals. And so those are the situations where we believe that the theory is most relevant. Now, a lot of the initial research on the theory was looking at somewhat artificial laboratory paradigms, such as the one that I described earlier, where they have pictures of faces on the screen and the eye tracker looks at where people are looking. So that doesn't really have direct implications for people's real-life well-being. And so in my research, my goal was to really look at a domain of life that was directly relevant for people's well-being across the whole lifespan. And that domain is, of course, the health domain. And to remind you how important the health domain is for well-being, I want to remind you that we are in a country where we can laugh about jokes like this one. So there's this older couple who are coming to a travel agency and they're being told, oh, there's a special casino for senior citizens. The slot machines pay off in prescription drugs. So, you know, it's sad, but this really drives home the point that in the U.S., the healthcare choices that people make not only have implications for their physical health, they also have implications for their financial outcomes and really quite serious implications and more serious as more and more emphasis is being put on people making their own choices. So I decided to study in the health domain. And my first study in that area was a simple survey type study where it's just looking at information seeking and how these age differences in emotional processing that I described earlier would play out when people seek information about healthcare and health-related outcomes. And this study was really inspired by the fact that when it comes to one's health, more information is not always a good thing. Just consider this woman here who says, I'd like to take Ginkgo to improve my memory, but I'm still trying to forget the disco years. So more information can be problematic, but this is kind of a funny example, but if you think about it, I mean, in the health domain, there's all kinds of scary information that people might be confronting. And in fact, research shows that one of the main reasons why people don't go out and get tested for very serious health concerns, for example, things like cancer or HIV, one of the main reasons is that people are afraid of the emotional impact of learning that there's something problematic about them. So the emotional aspects of actually acquiring this information are keeping people from getting the information. And so I was wondering if older people are more, even more sensitive to emotional information than younger people, and if they tend to focus on the positive in general, how is that going to play out when they look for health information? So in my first relatively simple survey type study that I designed with Laura Carstensen at Stanford, we gave people the following instructions to read. They were told, based on your personal background and your area of living, researchers can very accurately predict whether you are protected from or at risk for the following conditions or events. And it was a between subjects design, so half of the group were given the protection frame and the other half of the group were given the risk frame. And then I asked them how likely they would be to request information about a number of different events. And so there were non-lethal diseases, lethal diseases, natural disasters, all kinds of nasty things. And I kind of decided to use different different areas because I thought maybe there's a difference between natural disasters, because that's going to affect everyone equally, as opposed to diseases, which may be more likely as people hit advanced age. And in the study itself, they were presented in a jumbled order, so they weren't presented in those blocks. Now, in terms of my hypotheses, if you think about it, risk and protection from a rational point of view are really flip sides from each other, right? If you're not at risk, you're protected, and vice versa. So if you're not sensitive to this emotional framing, you should just, you know, decide how much do you want the information and then, you know, answer the question, and you shouldn't be influenced by this emotional frame. But I expected that older people, because they show this focus on emotional well-being, and because they tend to focus on positive material, they would be more sensitive to the instructional framing, and they would be more likely to request the information under the protection frame as compared to the risk frame. And for younger people, as I told you earlier, they should have an open time perspective. They should pursue information-seeking goals. So as a result, I would expect them to want the information regardless of which frame it was presented in. Participants were younger and older adults, and I actually just got them in a street survey. So innocent bystanders were attacked more or less by my undergraduate research assistants and asked, do you want to participate in the study? So it was a relatively brief survey type study. And all of that was done in the San Francisco Bay Area, and people were simply grouped into younger and older adults. And here's what I found. So in this graph, you see how likely people said they would be to request the information. The red bars are risk. The risk frame, the green bars are the protection frame, and the younger people on the left, you can see that it didn't really matter much whether it was presented in a positive or negative frame, but older people were significantly more likely to request the information if it was presented in this protection frame. And I looked at maybe, you know, it was associated with the prior experience they had with the different health threats, so I assessed that, I had them rate how much experience they had with each of the different diseases and natural disasters. And I also looked at maybe whether there are any differences across the different types of health threats, but none of those effects were found. So this gave me a first indication that this focus on the positive that's been seen in those laboratory scenarios is also appears to affect the kind of information that people seek about health-related outcomes. So in my next study, I extended this a little bit, and I looked at health-related decision-making. Now, as you all know, in recent years, there have been a lot of changes in the healthcare system, and they put more and more emphasis on people making choices by themselves. So, for example, here in this ad that was all over the D.C. area a couple of years ago, it says, Congress has choices in healthcare. America's seniors should too. Now, if you think about it, on the one hand, having more choice is a wonderful thing, because if people really have what it takes to pick out the exact option that's optimal for them individually, they can end up with much better outcomes than if they're presented with a one-size-fits-all approach. On the other hand, if people don't have what it takes and they're confused by all the choices that they have and they have biases that influence how they make their choices, then too much choice could actually be a problematic thing if people are not able to pick out the best for their individual situation. And the whole situation, especially for older people, is complicated because just making a decision by itself is an emotional process. It's not fun to make choices. I don't know, you can think about the recent decisions that you made, you know, whether to buy a new car or which computer to take. And it's not really pleasant, especially if you consider scenarios such as this one, where you have this man who is being told to choose between damned if you do, damned if you don't. And the devil says, come on, come on, it's one or the other. So decisions such as this one are extremely negative because the first characteristic is both of the outcomes are negative. So if both of the options, all of the options that you can choose among have some negative characteristics, that makes choices more emotionally challenging. And then in addition, a very important personal outcome is at stake. In this case, for him, it's where will I spend eternity? But in healthcare decisions, it's, you know, where will my health go? How will I be able to spend my financial resources? So both of these characteristics that you see here, high personal relevance and potentially negative outcomes, are very typical for decisions in the health domain, and that make those decisions very emotionally fraught and very, very stressful for people. Now, given all that research about how age groups differ and their emphasis on emotional processing, I was wondering what's going to happen in terms of those age differences in the context of such healthcare choices. So I set out to design a healthcare choice that I would use in my study. And so in order to get some inspiration, I went to the website of Medicare Part D. That was, you know, this website was supposed to help people choose the best Medicare plan for them. And this is just what I found in my local zip code. And you see here's a scroll bar. So it keeps going and going and going. There's way more choices. And, you know, there's some check marks, and there's some small print, and there's all this information. And so when I thought about putting this in front of the local ethics board, you know, and have it evaluated, whether it was something ethical to do, I was wondering whether they were going to come after me because it was, you know, a case of, you know, unnecessary research cruelty. So I decided... Well, I'm so glad I don't have to make those choices yet, because think about it. So I decided to settle for something somewhat less challenging, but still difficult. So here's one of the decision scenarios that I used. You see, I kept the table format, but there's only four different plans that people can choose from, and each of them is described on a number of different characteristics. And all of those characteristics were pre-selected, so I knew that they would be relevant for both older and younger people in making a healthcare choice. And as you can see, there's not one best choice. So each of the plans has some very good and some very poor aspects to it. And so there's not one single thing that's easy to pick out as the best solution. Instead, people have to make trade-offs among what's personally important for them. Remember, you know, personally important values are at stake. And each of the characteristics, each of the options that they have to choose has some negative choices to it. So that clearly, you know, it was meeting the criteria for the type of choice that should be leading to some emotional difficulty. And in fact, there was one participant, it was an older woman, who got so upset about having to deal with those decision scenarios that she actually had to discontinue the study. And then I debriefed her, and she was very excited about the research and all of that, but I actually had to go ahead and report to the ethical review board that there was a case where, you know, somebody had discontinued the study because they found it so stressful. So clearly I had succeeded in finding a decision scenario that would really, you know, touch people's emotional buttons, so to speak. And there was another one, so this is about different health plans, and there was another one which looked very similar, only it was choices among physicians. So in order to track people's information acquisition, so how they looked, how they went about making choices in this design, I presented it on a computer screen, and the content of the individual cells was not visible. So it looked like this. And people could use their mouse and click into the individual cells and open them one at a time. Once they had opened it, it stayed open as long as they wanted it to. They could open other cells, then the first cell would close. And they could return to cells as often as they wanted. There was no time limitation. And of course, I made very sure that regardless of their age, both younger and older people were completely comfortable with using the mouse. So there were no age differences in terms of just interacting with the computer. And so the computer, of course, secretly logged all the cells that people had opened and the sequence in which they had opened it and so on and so on. So I was also specifically interested how likely people would be to selectively look for positive material or negative material if I gave them some clues on where to find it. So I actually shaded the different cells, and I told people that the dark cells can be poor or very poor. The light cells will be good or very good, and then the gray cells will be average. So people had some initial idea of what kind of information they were going to find if they opened the cells. But if you look, you can't really differentiate between plan B and plan C unless you actually start opening the cells. So they still had an incentive to search around, but they knew in advance whether they were going to find something good or find something bad. And so, of course, that way, I had given people the opportunity to steer clear of the negative information if they chose to do so. Any questions so far about the scenario? But it's, yes?
Does it make a difference if plans are in rows or in columns?
I think in pilot studies, I did it the other way around, and this seemed to be more intuitive for people. More questions? All right. So my hypotheses were that older adults would review a greater proportion of positive material for all the reasons that I've already outlined. And I also was interested in people's recall of their choices because, you know, depending on how people recall the choice that they've made and whether they think it was a good choice or not, that's of course going to affect their future behavior when they're ready to make the next choice. And so I also looked at how positively or negatively people recall their choices, and I expected that older people would recall their choices again more positively than younger people. And then I recruited 20 younger and older adults to be in the study. And then in order to look at the data, I decided I would compute a single index that would tell me how much people were focusing on the positive or the negative. So this looks unnecessarily complicated. Basically, what I did is I looked at the proportion of positive images, positive material that people looked at relative to the total amount of information that they looked at. And as a result of that, I had a simple index. If that index is positive, it means that people look more at the positive. If the number is negative, people look more at the negative. And if it's zero, people review equal proportions of positive and negative material. And the important part about using this index is that it's also independent of how many pieces of information people overall review. So any age differences in that are kind of screened out from that index. And so here's what I found. So this is the index for recall, and as you can see, younger people, the blue bar, are not significantly different from zero. So younger people reviewed equal proportions of positive and negative material, but older adults showed a significant focus on the positive, just as I had expected. And then I asked them to recall their choice. I gave them just the printout of the decision scenario. I asked them to circle the plan that they thought they had chosen earlier, and then write into the cells what they recalled about the plan. And then I had student coders code how positive or negative that was. And when I looked at those findings, again, I computed a positivity index where positive scores mean a focus on the positive, negative scores a focus on the negative. And what I found is that younger people didn't really recall their choices disproportionately positive, but older people thought that they had made better choices than they actually had done, so that they recalled their choices disproportionately more positive. So far, the research that I presented indicates that age differences in emotional processing do, in fact, matter for the health domain, and they matter for the kind of information that people seek, and they matter for decision making. But so far, I haven't really presented you with much evidence that it's lifespan changes in people's goals that drive those effects. So in my next study, I set out to temporarily change people's goal priorities. And specifically, I wanted to switch older adults' goal priorities such that they temporarily look like those of younger people. And as I mentioned before, younger people are more interested in seeking information. And so I decided to prime everyone with information-seeking goals and tell them to please focus on the facts and details. Just a simple instruction. It was repeated several times over the course, so before they started working on the scenarios, and then after they had opened a few cells in the scenarios, they were reminded, by the way, focus on the facts and details. But that's all that I did. And then in the control condition, that was essentially a replication of the first study. And I expected that overall, I would still find this age-related positivity effect, that older people would look more at positive material and that they would recall their choices more positively. But I expected that this effect would be reduced in the condition where I temporarily elicited those information-seeking goals. So in that condition, I expected older people would look a lot more like younger people. And I recruited 60 younger and older adults. And I used exactly the same decision scenario as previously. And here's what I found. So this is the control condition. And as you can see, I basically replicated my first study, which is always very reassuring. So older adults showed a focus on the positive, younger adults didn't. But of course, I was much more interested to see what happened in the condition where I told them to focus on the facts and details. And as you can see, this focus, the focus on information-seeking goals really completely wiped out the age effect. So I was, of course, very pleased by this finding. And so I was curious what would happen in people's recall of their choices. So there was a distance, there was of 20 minutes between people looking at the choices and then later on recalling their choices. And so I was wondering whether these effects would stay even though later on when they were recalling their choices, I didn't remind them to focus on the facts and details. So here's what I found in the control condition. And again, I replicated my previous effect. Older adults were recalling their choices more positively than younger people. But the interesting part is when I looked at the control condition, because it seemed like it was somewhat reduced, but the age difference was significant again. So remember, these older people here in the information focus condition had just 20 minutes earlier reviewed equal proportions of positive and negative material about those plans or those doctors. So it's not that the information that they were taking in was any different from that of younger people. But something must have happened in the interim when they were rehearsing the information that by the time they were recalling what kind of, how the choice turned out that they made, the positivity effect was back. So basically, this indicates that I could temporarily switch people's focus, but only so long. And as soon as I stopped telling them to focus on the facts and details, focus on the facts and details, basically all the people reverted back to their default approach. I also looked at a whole range of covariates in that study, because if you think about it, there's a number of aspects in which older and younger people are different from each other. And those may all play a role, and maybe that's what I'm picking up, and it's not really age differences in motivational priorities that are driving the effects. So one of them is health and choice-related efficacy. So basically, whether people feel that they have what it takes to have good health and to make good health-related choices. And I looked at that, and there wasn't much difference between the age groups. So both groups equally felt that they had what it took to maintain their health and make good choices. And also, if I controlled for it, it didn't really make a difference. My findings remained the same. Then I looked at health locus of control, which basically means who do people think has control over their health? Is it they themselves? Is it their physician? Is it maybe fate? And I found some age differences in that. I found that older people were more likely to say that the control over their health was with their physician, whereas younger people were more saying that the control over their health was with themselves. But controlling for those effects didn't really change anything about the age-related positivity effect that I had found. I also looked at experience with healthcare choices, and I found something really interesting, because at first you would think that, you know, older people have been around way longer, so they should have made more healthcare choices in the past. And that was actually true for the physician choices. So older people said they had chosen way more physicians in their lives. But when I asked them about how many health plans they had chosen, that effect was no longer there. So it seems, and when I talked to people afterwards, older people told me, oh, I just was with the health plan that was offered by my company. And I stayed with that for as long as I was with the company. And then when I retired, suddenly I had to face all these different choices about which health plan to go with. So they didn't really have the experience. And then at an advanced age, they're suddenly faced with all those choices. So there were no age differences in how many healthcare plans people had chosen. And by the way, in that study, I made sure that the younger people that were in that study were not undergraduate students, because of course most undergraduate students are still covered by their parents' health plan. And so I specifically looked for younger people who were no longer eligible to be covered by their parents. So they were actually out there by themselves making those choices. But again, if I controlled for experience, I didn't really find that the basic effects that I had found were affected in any way. I also looked at cognitive performance. And not surprisingly, I found that the older people in my sample had somewhat worse memory, and they were not as fast at processing new material. But they had equal or better vocabulary than younger people. But none of that mattered for the effects that I found. And also I looked at emotional experience at baseline, because as I told you earlier, as people get older, on average, they feel more equally or more positive, but less negative. So I thought maybe, you know, it's the baseline emotions. People go into the situation with more positive and less negative emotions, and maybe older people just kind of look for the kind of information that matches their emotion. And that's why they go for the positive as compared to the negative. But again, it didn't make a difference. And then finally, I included a simple future time perspective scale. So that's a simple 10-item scale that just asks people, how much time do you feel you have left in your life? Do you feel that time is running out? Do you feel that you have all the time it takes to accomplish your goals? And so it doesn't talk about death at all. It's just, you know, in this situation that you're in, you know, what's your planning horizon? And if I controlled for that, all of the age effects were wiped out. So that could fully account for the fact why older people were actually focusing on the positive. So that's exactly consistent, of course, with the socio-emotional selectivity theory that I earlier described. It's not chronological age. It's none of these other things that change as people get older. It's really people's time perspective that seems to be driving those effects. So by now, I've presented you with pretty good evidence for all of the little boxes in this picture. So lifespan changes in motivation and time perspective appear to influence age differences in emotional processing, and those in turn appear to affect health-related information seeking and decision making. And in the next step, I decided to apply this research to the area of surrogate decisions. And that's not only theoretically interesting to see what happens when people make choices for others, but of course it has incredible practical relevance. Because as we all know, there's some situations where people are no longer able to make choices for themselves. And then in most cases, the physicians turn to friends or relatives or close others and ask those to make the decisions for the patients. And unfortunately, we also know from research that people are notoriously bad at getting this right. So if you look at studies where they ask patients what they would want for themselves and ask their relatives or whoever would be the proxy decision maker what they thought the patient would want for themselves, in some studies they were barely above chance level. So something really seems to prevent people from being able to put themselves into the shoes of the other person and make choices that the other person would have made. And so I was wondering whether maybe to some extent that was due to differences in time perspective. And in order to look at that more closely, I, of course, needed to figure out whether people just keep track of time perspective in themselves or whether they maybe also keep track of time perspective in others. And if they do, that would indicate that they're better able to, you know, adjust the kinds of decisions that they make to the time horizon that the patient has as compared to they themselves. Now, in the first, you know, if you think about it, is it true? Do people keep track of time in relationships? And this comic here suggests that they do. So there's this older lady who tries to enjoy an afternoon in the park, and she's approached by this gentleman who is looking for some good times. And she says, I don't give a damn if the days are dwindling down to a precious view. Just bug off. So this would indicate that people do keep track of time in social relationships, but it means different things to different people. But seriously, isn't it plausible if you consider a young man that the man would have unlimited time perspective for his relationship to his young son, but a more limited time perspective when he's thinking about his relationship with his aging mother? But to me, that made a lot of sense. And so I set out in another one of my little survey studies where I send out the undergraduates to go and find you know, passers-by and ask them questions. And this time, I asked people to imagine meeting with a social partner. And I asked them to either think of someone who's young, 20 years old, or someone who's old, 75 years old. And again, that was between subjects, so people were either given one or the other. And then they were asked to rate their own time perspective on that little scale that I described earlier, 10-item scale. And in addition, they were asked to rate the relationship-specific time perspective. Instead of how much time do you have left in your life, how much time do you have left in this relationship? And so then I looked how that differed according to people's own age and the age of the person they were thinking about. And I found 233 young adults and 88 older adults for this study. And here's what I found. So this global time perspective, just how much time people think they have in their own lives, was negatively associated with age. So the older people were, the less time they felt they had left in their life. But in addition to that, and independent of people's own age, if they were thinking about a relationship with an older person, they had a shorter time perspective for that relationship as compared to when they were thinking about a relationship with a younger person. So this indicates that to some extent, people seem to be able to keep track of time in relationships and to be sensitive of you know, what kind of time perspective the other person has. So I took this little detour study back into the context of surrogate decisions. And so, of course, I was very curious to see whether people would be able to appreciate the other person's time perspective as they were making healthcare choices. So this time, I had one condition where, as previously, just asked people to make the choices for themselves, but then there were two additional conditions. In one condition, I asked people to choose for a social partner of a similar age, someone their own age, or I asked them to choose for someone from the opposite age group. So younger people were choosing for an older person, and older people were choosing for a younger person. And I asked people to simply select a social partner, so I gave them the age range, and I asked them to think of someone and write down which relationship they had to that person so I could know how similar they felt they were to that person, how close they were, so I could make sure that across the different age groups and across the different conditions, people were more or less picking the same kind of closeness and similarity. And then I asked them to complete the two choice scenarios, either for themselves or for the social partner that they had just described. And also in the study, I wanted to tie up another loose end, because all along I've been arguing that focusing on the positive makes people feel good. But if you've noticed, I haven't really presented you any good evidence that that's actually the case. So in that study, I asked people to rate their positive and negative emotions at baseline, and then again after they had made each of the choices. And so that way I was able to see how their positive and negative emotions changed over time. So I could actually look at whether looking at the positive all the time makes you also feel good. So the decision scenario was essentially the same as in the previous study with all the, you know, presentation on the computer and the mouse clicks and all of that. Any questions about that scenario? Kind of complicated. We want to make sure we're all on the same page.
And once again, the other options vanished if you selected a button with all the other things for
life. Exactly. Well, at first everything was closed, and then you had to open them one at a time, and if you opened one and then opened another, the first one closed. So you could only see one at a time, but you could go back as many times as you wanted to. So there was no time limitation, so there wasn't anything in the environment that would have prevented younger and older people from accessing equal amounts of information. Okay, so my hypothesis for this. I expected that overall I would still find this age-related positivity effect. Older people would review more positive material and recall their choices more positively. But I expected that age differences would be reduced when people were choosing for a social partner from a different age group. So not when they were choosing for someone their own age, but when they were choosing for a different age group, I expected that they would be able to appreciate that that person has a different time perspective. And also, I expected that focusing on the positive, as I said earlier, would benefit people's emotional well-being. Okay, so participants were 71 younger and older adults, and here's what I found. So this is kind of complicated, so let me walk you through it. So again, I computed this positivity index, the higher, the more positive material people review. On the left, you have people who were choosing for themselves. And as you can see, I found the familiar age effect, the older adults in the purple bar were showing a focus on the positive, and younger people didn't. And if anything, that was more extreme when people were choosing for someone of their own age. For someone else, but their own age group. But this focus of older people towards the positive was significantly reduced when they were making a choice for a younger person. So this seems to indicate that people do keep track. And the interesting part for younger people, it didn't really make a difference who they were choosing for. So those bars may look different, but they're not statistically significantly different. And here's what I found for people's recall of their choices. So again, the same effect. Older people show a big, fat positivity effect if they're choosing for themselves or choosing for someone their own age. But when they're choosing for a younger person, that positivity effect is reduced. They basically look like younger people. And again, for younger people, it doesn't matter who they were choosing for. So here we have this interesting finding. It seems that older people seem to be aware of time perspective and seem to be able to take that into account when making their choices, but younger people are not. And I think it's simply because every older person has been young at some point, but of course young people haven't had this personal experience of how it feels like to be old. And if you think about the practical implications of this, this is of course unfortunate, because if you think who the proxy decision makers are, very often it's younger people who are asked to be the proxy decision makers for their older relatives. And in most cases, it's not an older person who's making choices for a younger person. So, you know, the opposite pattern of effects would have been more desirable, you know, in terms of making sure that people make choices that actually fit the needs of the people that they're making those surrogate choices for. I also promised you I would look at emotional experience. And so here you see the positive emotions. And as expected, making those choices didn't benefit people's emotional well-being. So you see over time, their positive emotion scores go down. And these are just the younger people. So for younger people who had always reviewed equal proportions of positive and negative material, making those choices was not a good thing. But the situation looks different if you look at older adults. And here you find this very interesting pattern. So here, those two conditions, people's emotions, positive emotions remain more or less stable, even though they're making these challenging choices. And those were the two conditions where people were choosing for themselves or a social partner of the same age. So those conditions where people, older people focused on the positive were also the conditions where they felt good about their choices and remained stable in their positive emotions. And when they, so to speak, let their guard down and chose for a younger person and reviewed more of the negative material, then their positive emotions showed the same dip that younger adults showed in all three conditions. So that's evidence suggesting that older people really face this trade-off between feeling good and looking at the bright side or reviewing equal proportions of positive and negative material and then feeling bad as a result of making those difficult choices. So clearly, here we have one of those situations that I talked about earlier where there's a goal conflict. So far, I've shown you that these associations between lifespan changes and motivation and emotional processing really do influence the health domain in terms of what kind of information people seek, in terms of the way they make decisions, and in terms of the way they make decisions for others. But so far, you know, I don't want you all to go out there and say, you know, older people are not looking enough at the negative and we really have to push the negative towards them. Because one important thing that I didn't really look at in my studies, I looked at the way people reviewed information, but I didn't look at decision quality. And there may be something going on with decision quality that really tells a somewhat more differentiated story. So also, having all of the information at once, you know, that's the typical scenario that you may have when you make your Medicare Plan D choice. But it doesn't really mimic well the way people make choices in real life, because they may learn something about them, about a new thing here. You know, say you're trying to choose a new car, you learn something from a website, you learn something from talking to someone else, you learn something by buying a magazine or talking to the car dealer. So the information trickles in over time, and then you have to keep it in mind until you actually come to the point where you make your choice. And so I was in collaboration with Joe Michaels at Cornell. I decided to look a little bit more closely and what would happen in terms of decision quality in scenarios where people gradually learned information. So in the scenario that we designed, basically they all looked like this. So they learned about this new health plan, Health Now, and they learned dental care is fully covered. And then they got another piece of information about Health Now, that routine exams are not covered. So they have a good and a bad piece of information. Then they learn that in this other plan, CareNet, prescription drugs are fully covered. And they learn that in CareNet, physical therapy is fully covered. And then after they have seen all of this information, and all of that just is presented at a screen one at a time, so they can't go back. If they see it once, and then that's it. And then at the end, they make their choice. And so here we could look more at decision quality, because the first plan had a positive and a negative characteristic, and the second plan had two positive characteristics. So just going by the nature of characteristics, you would say that the first plan is better. But we were wondering maybe, you know, there's age differences in how much people care about the dental care. And so after people completed the study, we had them rate how much each of the individual characteristics really mattered for them. And then we weighed them. So if somebody said that dental care was really covered, then we assigned greater weight to that aspect of it. And so no matter how we sliced and diced it, if we just took, you know, the overall number of positive and negative characteristics, or if we took the individual weightings, the findings are exactly the same. And so we were interested how younger and older people would fare in this scenario. And we not only looked at healthcare plans, we also looked at choices among treatment options, choices among primary care physicians, and choices among home healthcare aides. And as in the previous study, we used instructional manipulations to temporarily shift around people's processing goals. In a control condition, we basically didn't give them any particular instructions. In the emotion focus condition, we asked them to focus on how they felt about each of the options. So how do you feel about this plan now that you learned this piece of information? And you're given a new piece of information. How do you feel about this plan? And in the information focus condition, they were actually asked on, you know, focusing on remembering that piece of information so they would be able to make their future choice. And so in terms of what we expected, you know, we were curious to see whether older and younger people would react to those instructions in the same way. And so whether both older and younger people would really benefit in terms of their choice quality by being told to focus on information seeking as compared to the emotional content of the material. And so what we found is actually very interesting, because you, on the left you see the younger people, and you see that in the control condition, in the gray bar, they actually performed worse than in the information focus condition. So younger people really benefited from being told to focus on the facts and details and try to remember the individual pieces of information. But for older people, if anything, we found the opposite pattern. So older people performed well in the conditions where they were asked to focus on their emotions or where we just left them alone. But when we asked them to focus on the individual details, they actually performed worse. So that's really puzzling and interesting and kind of, you know, goes back on this general notion that everybody should make the choices in the same way. Because remember in this earlier study, I showed you that by telling people to focus on information acquisition, I can make older people look like younger people, right? So that's great. But then actually if you look at their choice outcomes, it doesn't look so great anymore. And so here's what we think happened. There's really two different ways that you can approach a choice like this. You can take a very deliberative approach where you keep track of each individual piece of information. And then when it comes time to make the choice, you retrieve them all from memory, and you integrate the information that you gathered, and then you make your choice. So that's the deliberative approach. Another approach is to focus on your emotions. So here, you would feel good about learning good things about the first plan, and then you would feel bad about that plan when you learn that routine care is not covered. And instead of trying to keep those in mind over time, you would form a composite. So overall, you would feel mixed about that plan. And then every time you receive more information, you basically add that to this composite instead of trying to keep the individual pieces of information. So similarly, when you learn two good things about this CareNet plan, then you integrate that in feeling very good about this plan. And so then by the time when the time comes where you have to make the choice, you simply compare those two, and then you make your decision. And we didn't just show them four pieces of information. We showed them, you know, five pieces and six pieces and seven and eight pieces. So by the end, even younger people had a lot of difficulty keeping track of all the individual information. And so this deliberative approach puts very, very high requirements in terms of people's ability to take in all the information. Whereas for the emotional approach, even if you add additional pieces of information, you still have to, what you have to keep track of is what you remember about that plan, how you feel about that plan. And so then that doesn't really, you know, it doesn't place a higher load on your memory. And so we think that what may have happened is that older adults' tendency to focus on the positive may be just one aspect of a generally different approach in how they process decision-making that's associated with their focus on emotional processing. And so that is not necessarily something that's automatically problematic in the context of decision-making. So what have we learned so far? We learned that health-related information processing differs by age. We learned that older people do show a disproportionate focus on positive information across a variety of contexts. We learned that age groups seem to differ in their reliance on deliberative versus effective processing strategies, so emotion versus, you know, trying to take in all the information and keep it in mind. And we found some evidence that age differences appear to be driven by motivational priorities, not chronological age. So, of course, now the question is, what should we find out next? And one important focus of ongoing research is to look at direct evidence for age differences in processing strategies. Because so far, what I've just described to you, that explanation was inferred after we actually had those surprising results. So we really need to go out and get more direct information of what it is that people are really doing. And we could do so by asking people to talk out loud as they're making their choices, or we could take another route where we use functional magnetic resonance imaging, where we see what people's brains are doing, and maybe we find differences in how people keep track of emotional content of material as they make those choices. Also, it's very important to see whether there are any age differences in differentiating relevant from irrelevant information. Because as I just showed you, older people's focus on emotions may turn out well in a scenario such as this, where all of the individual pieces of information are pre-selected to really matter for the choice at hand. So all of those were pre-selected to be relevant, practically relevant for choosing a good healthcare plan. What happens if we put some other things in there, such as a friendly sales associate? And of course, that's what happens all the time in real life. Yeah, you go to the car dealer to find out more about the car, and then you find this incredibly friendly, open, extroverted individual who is so happy to see you. And so the question is, are there any age differences in how well people can differentiate relevant from irrelevant information, especially if it's really emotionally salient and really, you know, gets people's emotions rolling? Also, we're interested in looking at real-life decision scenarios. So all of those were healthcare scenarios, and they were somewhat similar to the choices that people may encounter in real life. But in the long run, I'm hoping to collaborate with colleagues at the Weill Cornell Medical College and actually look at patients' decision-making in real-life hospital contexts. So what's the take-home message to leave you with? If there's a single thing you remember from this talk, I want you to remember about socio-emotional selectivity theory. Because it doesn't just apply to health-related choices. It also applies to the kind of social goals that people have, how large they want their social networks to be. Do the younger people usually want a very large social network where they can network with lots of people and get lots of information to prepare for the future? Whereas as people get older, they're more content having a relatively smaller social network. And again, there's differences in the kind of information that people look at when they process their environment. And this doesn't just matter, as I said, for those laboratory scenarios where you have those somewhat artificial decisions, but it matters in terms of real life, how people process the information that they get. And it's also important to remember that those changes that you see over the lifespan in terms of the goals that people pursue have positive and negative aspects. So they're positive aspects, because it seems that older people's tendency to focus on the positive makes them feel good. And also there may be some benefits in certain types of scenarios for them to make better choices. But of course, there can be a negative side to it. So if older people really don't look at the negative, if they don't read the small print before they're signing a contract, if they're too susceptible to the emotional messages that are sent to them by advertising, or if they're more likely, I have one study where I show that older people are more likely to kind of expect good things about their social partners a priori without having met them. That could be negative because it makes them more susceptible to fraud. So there's really two sides to this, and the most important aspect is just to be aware of it. And this brings me to the end of my talk. And before I take your questions, I would like to thank my collaborators at the various institutions. Thank you very much.
This has been a presentation by Human Development Outreach and Extension at Cornell University.